Osaka withdraws from the French Open, the Yankees are in a free fall, and NBA versus the fans. LaValle Sports Talk begins right now. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the LaValle Sports Talk podcast, brought to you by the Sideline Network. As always, I am your host, Chris LaValle. Hope you all are doing well and staying safe. We're going to kick off the pod this week. We're going to discuss the Naomi Osaka boycotting the press ahead of the French Open, and now she has chosen to withdraw from the tournament. So last week, Osaka posted to social media that she would not be speaking to the press after playing because she wanted to protect her mental health. The 23-year-old was fined $15,000 after not speaking to the press following her first-round victory. She was also threatened with disqualification if she failed to show up for future press conferences. Following that, Osaka made the decision to withdraw from the tournament, and she issued a statement following her withdrawal, and I quote, "I think now the best thing for the tournament, the other players, and my well-being is that I withdraw so that everyone can get back to focusing on the tennis going on in Paris. I never wanted to be a distraction, and I accept that my timing was not ideal and message could have been clearer," end quote. She also revealed that she has experienced depression and anxiety since winning her first major at the 2018 U.S. Open and explained that speaking to the media often make her nervous. She apologized to any media members she had impacted with her decision, and I quote, "I'm not a natural public speaker and get huge waves of anxiety before I speak to the world's media. I get really nervous and find it stressful to always try and engage and give the media the best answers I can," end quote. So this is a complex topic, and I'm torn on it, to be completely honest with you. So let's start off here. I believe that mental health has had a negative stigma for a long time, and I think most people would agree with that statement. You know, and I'm happy to see that more athletes like Osaka have made their battles with mental health public because it seems to have helped reduce the negative stigma that has surrounded mental health. Osaka has a massive platform and she's using it in many productive ways, this being one of them. And I wish her nothing but the best. With that being said, and this is where I'm probably going to turn some people off, she's not above the rules. I respect what she's going through. I empathize with it. And again, I think that the fact that she's making her issues public, her struggle public, is tremendous. And I hope more athletes do the same thing, more celebrities, more people bring awareness to mental health because it is a true issue in this country, or in the world rather, not just in this country, but in the world. Like, people struggle with mental health issues, disorders, however you want to look at it. I empathize with it, but she's not above the rules. No one is. No one's above the rules when it comes to sporting events. Osaka, if you did not know this, is the highest paid female athlete, not in the U.S., on the planet. She makes more money than any other female athlete in the world. That comes with responsibility, which includes talking to the press. You can dislike the press. We already know that I am not a big fan of the media in general. But when you're an athlete, when you're a celebrity, you gain your following from press coverage. If there was no press there, no press at any of these tennis majors, she would not be the highest paid female athlete on the planet because no one would know who the hell she is. No one would pay attention to her. Nike or whomever it is that she has sponsoring her, Gatorade, whatever it may be, would not sign her because her face wouldn't be recognizable. It wouldn't sell product. She can't be the highest paid athlete on the planet if nobody knows who the hell she is. And as time has passed, we've seen too many athletes believe that they're above the norms and don't feel that they should adhere to guidelines or rules. I'm not saying that's what Osaka is doing. I'm not trying to conflate her statement about her mental health or her feelings about anxiety when it comes to the press and what other athletes have done. However, if you open that door and someone comes out and says, "Hey, I'm not talking to the media because I just don't feel up to it," for whatever their reasons may be, and you see tournament officials, like at the French Open, if they just step back and went, "Oh, okay, that's fine. We're not going to fine you, or we're not going to hold you accountable," you're going to see more and more athletes do the same thing. And that's the problem. The French Open has rules in regards to press access to athletes, and if you want to take part in their tournament, you are expected to adhere to those rules, which I agree with. Do I think that she should have been fined $15,000? I think that's a little excessive. But I understand, though, why they did it. I mean, who the hell am I to decide how, you know, the monetary figure? Because I don't, I really don't know how much you make per victory in the French Open. That could be, and maybe that's what it is what they do is they fine you. Let's say she makes $15,000 for every match that she wins. So because she won her first round, they pretty much took her prize money away, which I guess would be fair. I don't know. But anyway, the French Open, though, isn't alone in this. I mean, when you sit back, think about in the NFL, for example, they have similar rules after games each week. Players have to make themselves accessible to the press, or at least the star players have to. The coaches have to. But during Super Bowl week, you have media row. Like, you have to go to the go do whatever the media event is. I mean, there's the Marshawn Lynch thing years ago, where Marshawn Lynch refused to talk to the press and he got fined however much money it was by the NFL. Again, these corporations, I should say, these sports leagues have rules, especially when it comes to the press. Again, the press builds the following, which comes into branding, which comes into money. It's at the end of the day, it's always about the bottom line. But it's not just the bottom line for the sports leagues, for the organizations. It's also for these athletes. They're gaining more notoriety by speaking to the press, especially if they perform well. And here's the one crux. And again, I know people who are listening to this are going, wow, you're an asshole. I'm not trying to be an asshole here. I'm really not. But at a time when everyone talks about privilege, it's an incredible privilege to have media members fawning over you and wanting to sit down and hear what you have to say. And there are too many athletes out there who take this privilege for granted. I'm not, and again, I'm repeating myself over and over again to try and make the point. I am not conflating what Osaka is doing, but I think that we can take two things away from what's happened here. On the one hand, on the positive side is, again, the attention and the positive attention that needs to be taken in regards to mental health. That is the positive side of this. On the negative side of this, though, we also have to look at the fact that that Osaka is not alone in not wanting to speak to the press. But we have to be careful about and wary about just allowing people to push back and say, look, I don't want to speak to them for whatever their reasons may be. And there's that fine line between diminishing what Osaka is saying about her mental health and things of that nature and also saying, well, tough shit, this is what you signed up for. And I'm on that line of, I don't see Osaka giving back her money, her millions of dollars that she has made, and nor should she have to. I'm not saying that she should have to, but she's not giving back her millions of dollars that she made because the press was giving her the access that they were giving her and boosting her to levels on high because of her performance on the court. But again, with that comes responsibility. You are expected, as being the top player in the world in your sport, you are expected to grant press access. That's just the way that it works. If you don't want to, if it's too anxiety ridden for you, then to be honest, maybe you shouldn't play the sport anymore. Maybe that's just not for you. If you can't handle the pressures and what's expected of you, the responsibilities of being the top athlete in your sport, then maybe you shouldn't be playing your sport. That's just the way it works. Think about it in real life. Think about it. I'm assuming nobody who listens to this podcast is a professional athlete. Think about it at your job. You're expected to give a presentation. You have, for whatever your job may be, you're expected to give a presentation at the end of the week. Public speaking is not your strong suit. You do not feel comfortable speaking in front of an audience. You get anxious about it. You have anxiety. You think that your boss, you go to your boss and you go, hey, so I'm not giving that presentation because I'm not a good public speaker. You think your boss is just going to sit back and go, oh, that's okay. Oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, chief. Nope, no big deal. We'll find somebody else to do your job for you. No, they're going to fire you. They're going to say, well, you need to nut up and figure it out, or we're going to let you go. That's just the way the world works. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that's the real world. We all have to handle and deal with our own mental hurdles in life. It's not diminishing what Osaka is going through, but it is also bringing the fact that life comes with challenges and you have to overcome those challenges. You can't just keep giving people a pass because you feel empathetic towards them or you're sympathetic towards their cause. You can respect their cause, you can be empathetic towards them, but there's also, the fact of the matter is, you have to be realistic. This is the real world. And frankly, this is what we've seen with these younger generations is, I don't want to call them weak because I think that that's mean. And again, I'm not trying to call Osaka weak. I'm not. I'm really, really not. But we have seen time and time again where this younger generation, as soon as they meet any type of adversity, they pull back and they don't try and find a way to work around it and overcome their struggles and find other ways to succeed. As soon as they hit adversity, they cry foul, and then everybody pushes back and goes, oh, well, we need to be more empathetic. We need to be more sympathetic. We need to understand what it is that they're going through. When that's just not the way the real world works. At the end of the day, you've got to go to work every day. You have to pay your bills. Otherwise, you don't have a house. You don't have food. You don't have clothes. You have nothing. You're out on the street. If you can't find a way to work around whatever hurdles it is that you need to work through, you're screwed. So again, it's a very privileged thing to be able to be an athlete, to be able to already have made generational wealth like Osaka has in a very short amount of time, sit back and go, well, look, I'm just not going to take part in this because it's a mental hurdle for me. Again, you know, like I said, I could be turning a lot of people off here. If I am, I apologize. I'm not trying to offend you. But this story really does bring out a bunch of different layers that I do think needs to be talked about. There's the mental health side of things, which, again, I hope more athletes, more celebrities, more people in the public bring note to their struggles to try and diminish that negative stigma that comes around mental health. But on the other end, we still do need to talk about the fact that rules still need to be followed. And every job, or mostly every job, has rules, has guidelines that have to be followed. And if you don't follow them, you either get fined, or you get docked a day's pay, or you lose your job. That's just the way it is. It doesn't matter if you're a tennis superstar or you're a janitor. You have certain jobs that you have certain guidelines and responsibilities that you're expected to follow. And if you can't adhere to them, well, then you lose your job. So with that being said, I would love to hear from you if you want to push back, if you agree, you disagree. As always, let me know at LaValleyCH on Twitter. Let's talk some NFL. So aside from Aaron Rodgers, Julio Jones remains the top news story in the NFL right now in the offseason. So plenty of teams are still reportedly interested in landing the star wide receiver. The Seahawks have been the most recent team reported to have reached out to the Falcons in regards to a trade. A new report has come out detailing what the Falcons are looking for in compensation for Jones, a first-round pick next season, and a player or two. Look, in my opinion, that's a pretty big ask for a 32-year-old player who only played 9 games last season, catching only 51 passes. According to thebiglead.com, the Falcons are a bit desperate to try and move Jones this week because if they can, they can spread his dead cap hit, which is $40 million. That's absolutely insane. Over the next 2 seasons instead of eating it all in 2021. This season, Jones is due $15.1 million, which is quite high, in my opinion, given the production over his past few seasons. Look, please don't get me wrong. Like I said last week, Julio Jones on the right team is a huge asset, but he's got to be healthy in order to make the type of trade Atlanta is looking for worth it for any team. He is a massive asset for all the teams that I had listed last week, New England, the Seahawks. Obviously, the Seahawks get him. That would be enormous. The Cardinals, the Titans, the Colts. I'm not even going to say the Packers because they're not even in contention. But any team that could get him, if he can stay healthy, yeah, he is still a top, I don't know, top 6, top 7 wide receiver in the league. Maybe even top 5. I don't know. I'd really have to dig into the numbers. But his production over the past few seasons hasn't been great because he hasn't been able to stay on the field. And paying him $15.1 million, that's a high ask for a player that may only play half the season, give or take his health. You know, he's very much like an A.J. Green. A.J. Green is a tremendous wide receiver, at least he was, before he was constantly getting injured. Julio Jones is kind of in the same boat. Do I think Julio Jones is an asset? Absolutely. If, and that's a big if, he can stay healthy. So we'll see what happens moving forward. I really don't think he's going to the Seahawks, though, by the way. I still think the Patriots are the team that will end up landing him. In other news, Buffalo is the favorite to land Zach Ertz. According to ESPN's Field Yates, the Bills reworked wide receiver Stephon Diggs' contract, which created enough cap room to put them in play for the star tight end. Per Yates, Diggs' new deal clears $8 million off the books for the Bills during the upcoming season. Meanwhile, Ertz is due $8.25 million this coming season. The Eagles could remove that amount by cutting or trading Ertz after this past Tuesday, June 1st. Now, Ertz is only 30 years old, and I think that that's something to keep in mind, as for me, that still means he has plenty of mileage left in him. Snagging him would be a great safety net for Josh Allen and help ensure that the Bills remain formidable on offense this upcoming season. I think if the Bills can get Ertz, that is a massive safety blanket. Massive safety blanket for Josh Allen. Ertz, to me, is still a top five tight end in the game. I don't really think he's out of the top five yet. I know his production value last season sucked, but that really wasn't on him. That was because the Eagles had no offensive line. Carson Wentz didn't play well, nor did Jalen Hurts. So obviously, if no one's throwing him the football, it's kind of hard for him to have a whole hell of a lot of catches or touchdown passes. So I still think Ertz is a top tight end in the league. I was hoping the Colts were going to get him. That's obviously not going to happen. So if he's going to go anywhere, if he ends up in Buffalo, that's a massive get for the Bills. And I believe that an acquisition like that would only cement the Bills being a Super Bowl contender this coming season. The Yankees suck. They're playing like butt cheeks right now. I mean, I don't get it. I just don't get it. At one point during this losing slide that they're on, of losing 13 of their last 15 games, five losses in a row came to the 22-31 Detroit Tigers. Are you kidding me? The Tigers? Not to mention the fact that they are owned by the Tampa Bay Rays, who are now in first place in the AL East. And it's put up or shut up time for Aaron Boone. I am so tired of this dude. Aaron Boone was quoted as saying, quote, "We are absolutely good enough. We need to figure it out," end quote. Well, no shit, you need to figure it out. What kind of dumbass quote is that? We need to figure it out. And since when is good enough the standard for the New York Yankees? Good enough? How about we need to exceed expectations? We are the New York Yankees. We should be throttling these teams like the Detroit Tigers. We have, if not the highest, one of the highest payrolls in baseball. The reason why is because we as an organization demand excellence. At least we used to, back when good old George was running things. And that's the thing, is that his kids do not have the stomach for this whatsoever. They don't. They are awful owners. They should sell the team at this rate. They don't have the stomach to put the fear of God in the players and the manager. You could look, a lot of people hated George Steinbrenner. He was an ass. There's no question about it. Dude was a prick. 100%. But he is the greatest owner in the history of sports. And here's why. He didn't accept losing for anything. It didn't matter. Like, he was more of an irrational fan than arguably any fan base in the world. Because the minute he felt like his team was sliding, he made a move. Irrational or not, he made a move. Because he couldn't stomach losing. He didn't care about the press. He didn't care about what anybody said. He sat back and said, "I want to win. I expect to win. I have the highest payroll in baseball. I pay you to win. That is why you're getting paid $5 to $10 million more than any other player on another team. You're getting paid for your excellence because I expect you to be excellent." Now all of a sudden we sit back and it's, "Well, you know, we're good enough. We'll figure it out because we are good enough." Well, guess what, Aaron Boone? This team is not good enough. This team's a joke. The middle of your lineup is atrocious. The 6-9 hitters in the Yankees lineup are hitting 187, 238, 197, and 195, respectively. Pathetic is what that is. That's not good enough. That's abhorrent. The normal starting left fielder, Clint Frazier, he's batting 182. In what world is that good enough? That's fucking pathetic. That's what that is. Where the hell is Howe? Where's Steinbrenner? He should have been out a while ago. Again, this is why I say kids don't have the stomach for this. He should have been out a while ago saying this is not acceptable. There is no excuse for this. We will be better. We will make changes. We will do what we have to do to compete and to win. Like I can't keep watching this team being run by a bunch of Neanderthals and managed by a pansy. Good enough? Oh, we're just good enough. No, you're not just good enough, or you shouldn't just be good enough. You should be great. That's the expectation of playing for the New York Yankees, of rooting for the New York Yankees. We are expected to be the best. And if our manager can't bring the players to exceed expectations, to play great, then he needs to go. And maybe that could be the spark. Maybe that would be the kick in the pants for the players to realize that they're expendable. Because they are. And they need to be reminded that they are. Again, like it or not, that is the one thing Steinbrenner did right. He made sure his players knew, if you don't perform, you're gone. Batting 187, 185, 192, or whatever the hell it was, that they would be gone. Absolutely, 100% they would be gone, and they should be. You're a Major League Baseball player, and you're batting in the 180s, and you're starting? That's pathetic. That's like being a quarterback and completing 35 to 40% of your passes. This is not good enough. This isn't even close to being good enough. This is atrocious, and it's embarrassing. This organization needs to get their head out of their ass and figure it out soon. Otherwise, this season's going to be a wash. Another season down the drain. So the NBA has an interesting issue on their hands, and that's the fans acting out during these playoff games. There is no justification for what the fans have done. You had Westbrook, who had popcorn thrown at him. Kyrie had a water bottle tossed at him. Trae Young was spit at. And most recently, during game 4 of the Wizards Sixers, a fan rushed the court during the game, got tackled immediately. That was a pretty sweet tackle, by the way, by security. And so here we are. We are looking at a relationship that has completely deteriorated between the NBA and its fan base. And the players and fans used to have a great relationship, especially if you look back in the 90s. You know, the NBA was embraced by the fans. Obviously, I mean, we had the Malice in the Palace thing, but outside of that, the NBA and its fans have had an excellent relationship with each other. However, over the past year, players have been lecturing their fans and the public at large about how awful they are. Think about it. Last season, when they did the social justice movement, you had superstars sitting up there almost demeaning people, which is why I said that's why I think the ratings are so bad, why I think people have turned off the NBA. Is that you have a lot of fans who sat back and be like, don't fucking lecture me. You don't know what's in my heart. You don't know who I am. Stop telling me how horrible of a human being I am. You have no idea who I am. And I believe that that has deteriorated that relationship and created one of animosity. Now, again, I'm not saying that the fans are justified in doing what they're doing. They're absolutely not. You can't throw shit at people just because you don't like what they said to you. You can heckle. You can say what you want. Within reason. But I think it's important to point out, and you can't ignore it, that there is definitely a deterioration between the fans and the NBA product. And the players, obviously, part of the product. And I think that what we've seen, this deterioration between the fans and the product, really is an example of the GOAT and greatness debate between Jordan and LeBron James. I know, another opportunity for me to bash LeBron, but it's true. Think about it. Jordan brought fans together. Jordan made basketball the sport in the country when he was on. In the 90s, Jordan was the athlete, the global athlete. Everybody had their eyes on the NBA. The fans embraced the product. Think about when Jordan retired. It was, who's the next Michael Jordan? Who's going to take up his mantle? The fans were desperate. The media was desperate for a new Michael Jordan because of what he meant to the game of basketball. They're not going to have those conversations when LeBron retires. LeBron turns fans away. He's been pushing them away for years. And that's the biggest difference between the two. That is why the GOAT debate isn't a real debate. It's not even close. Jordan is the greatest of all time, not only for what he did on the court, but for what he meant to the National Basketball Association off the court. LeBron in the same way, but he has brought negative attention to the sport rather than positive attention to the sport. LeBron walks around with this arrogance of, I'm smarter than you, I know best. Why? Because you make millions and millions of dollars, that must make you smart? No, man, that's not how it works. You sound like an uneducated bum half the time. Jordan was smart enough to know when to open his mouth and when to keep his mouth shut. LeBron has never figured that out. When Jordan left the game, he left the game better than what it was when he entered into the league. LeBron, when he leaves the game, he's going to leave it worse than when he entered. That's the difference between the two. And I think that the NBA has a real issue on its hands. I've been saying it for months now. You're seeing this backlash. Now, again, not every fan is being an ass and throwing stuff. And again, I'm not justifying it. But I think that it's a kind of like a sneak peek into how a lot of people feel. They don't feel like the NBA and its players are looking to have a positive impact in their lives. And look, it's not an athlete's responsibility to make you feel good about your life. But on that same page, when people are tuning in to a sporting event or giving their hard-earned money to a franchise, to root for that franchise, they're doing it because it makes them feel good. That's why they go. You go to a sporting event because you enjoy being there. You enjoy being around the fans, being around other people, and you are invested in the success of the team, of the players. People don't feel that way about the NBA. They don't want to see they don't want to see these players succeed. They don't want to see these athletes do well. And why is that? Well, because the athletes don't seem to give a shit about you, about the fans. They don't. Let's look at it even deeper. Think about the amount of times that you see all these superstar players now sitting out. Regular season games, just being like, yeah, you know, I don't feel like playing today. I'm just going to sit out. I know it's a Thursday night primetime game on TNT. I'm just not going to play. I don't feel like it. I'd rather get all dressed up and look suave on the sidelines and put on a show with my teammates, like high-fiving and smiling and look at me, I'm just chilling. I look good in my, you know, $5,000, $10,000 suit. That's more important to the players now than actually putting on a performance for the fans. Long gone are the days of Kobe Bryant, who would make the comment that I'm giving 100% because what if this is one of my fans' first and only times ever seeing me perform? That's true greatness. That's embracing the privilege and the opportunity that he had to do what he loved to do for a living. That type of responsibility, that type of fan service, you don't see that from a player like LeBron James or Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving, Kawhi Leonard. I could go on. You don't see that type of dedication to the sport. Again, that's the difference between somebody like Michael Jordan and somebody like LeBron James. Somebody who is willing to embrace the privilege, the opportunity, his greatness of being able to play a sport and try and give back to the fans, even if it was just for one night, to try and give them something special to always remember, and somebody else who only cares about his bottom line, about his legacy, about what it means to him. Not what it means to the collective, but what it means to him. It's the difference between being a selfless superstar and a selfish superstar. And I think that's the difference between the NBA that a lot of fans used to love and the NBA product that we see now. All right, so I want to end this podcast with probably my favorite story so far this year in sports. And that is Justin Thomas, who stepped up and cut a check for a golfer to keep chasing his dream. Quote, "I want to support what you're doing," end quote. Justin Thomas said as he handed over a personal check to mini tour golfer Mike Visacki at the Charles Schwab Challenge. Quote, "Keep chasing your dream," end quote. Thomas adds as he heads off to finish tied for 40th on Sunday. Now, for those of you who don't know who Visacki is, he made news in April when he broke down in tears as he told his father that he had successfully qualified for the Valspar Championship, his first PGA Tour event. And that video, combined with his story of struggling at no-name events as he continued to chase his dream, led to an invite to compete over Memorial Day weekend at the Charles Schwab Challenge, which is where he had that moment with Justin Thomas. The golfer reportedly has put over 200,000 miles on his Honda Accord playing in tournaments with next to no money on the line, now finds himself with this lifeline thanks to Justin Thomas. And Visacki was quoted as saying, quote, "It's extremely hard. Sometimes entry fees are $400 to $600, and if you don't win or come in second, I mean, you barely break even. Then it's not like every week is a free entry fee that we're just playing for a prize. Like if you miss two or three cuts and each cut, each tournament costs you $500, then in 2 to 3 weeks, you're down $1,500 just in entry fees, not alone practicing, having to worry about paying rent, phone, bill, electric, gas. Hopefully that car's not going to break down. Even with all my success, it's still very, very, very hard to make a living. If I was having to pay rent, I would probably still wouldn't be able to play professional golf as much as I've won in the past," end quote. And I think that's something that, as a golf fan, I don't even think about, really, is the entry fees for a lot of these golfers that aren't on the PGA Tour who are desperately trying to make it onto the tour. Because if you're on the PGA Tour, more than likely, your sponsors are going to pay your entry fees for you. That's usually how it works. So you don't think about the fact that these guys who are grinding and trying to make it are, you know, if they don't make the cut, well, they're out $500, $600, however much money it is, just to try and make it. But anyway, let's focus in on Thomas for a second. What he did was incredible, and it should be highlighted that this should have been a top story in sports, and it wasn't. Why? Probably because it's a feel-good story. And, you know, we're too busy focusing in on the drama and all the negative crap that goes on in the world that we don't focus in on the positive stuff. And the positivity behind it, I think, is why it's my favorite story so far this year. The humility that Thomas has to be able to cut a check. Now, I mean, look, Thomas is, you know, generational wealth. The dude's made his money. He never has to play golf again if he didn't want to. But that's not the point. The point is he respected this dude's drive and his determination to try and make it, and he just wanted to try and help him out a little bit. He wanted to see this guy succeed, and that's the thing that we don't see very often in sports. Not at least we don't see it because it's not promoted as much, is one athlete wanting to help and root for somebody who may become his competitor down the line, but he wants to see him succeed or her succeed. We don't hear about those types of stories. And maybe it's because not a lot of people are willing to be as humble and as kind and as generous as Thomas is. Or maybe it's just because not a lot of people really care about those type of feel-good stories. I do. I think this is tremendous. Again, you have somebody who's the number two ranked golfer in the world who still remembers what it was like grinding and trying to make it and sees somebody else's desire and drive and determination and respects that enough to cut a personal check and say, here, keep living and pursuing your dream. I believe in you. I believe in what you're trying to succeed. That is awesome. And Justin Thomas, as far as I'm concerned, is a fan for life. Like I am now, he's probably my favorite person in sports right now. And he will be for a while. Mainly because that's not something you see every day. And it could be an underreported story, like I said a moment ago. Maybe a lot of people are reaching out and giving other players personal checks. I doubt it. But it wasn't like he was doing it in front of the camera either. The only reason why this was recorded was because Visacki's father pulled out his cell phone and started recording this thing. I mean, it's an incredible story, and I really wish it had gotten more coverage than it did. I mean, the only reason why I found out about it was because I was on the internet just looking for stories about golf to see if I had missed anything from the Charles Schwab tournament this past weekend. And the Justin Thomas thing popped up. It's the only reason why I found it. It wasn't like it was, you know, plastered on ESPN's front page or any other Bleacher Report, any other website. You know, but it should have been. This is a story that should be talked about because it's why I love sports. I think it's why a lot of people love sports. It's that feel-good sports story. So anyway, I wish this kid nothing but the best. I hope he's able to actually accomplish his dream and become a PGA Tour player. And good on Justin Thomas for just being a damn good human. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the LaValley Sports Talk Podcast, brought to you by the Sideline Network. As always, thank you so much for tuning and listening. I greatly appreciate it. Please be sure to check me on iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review. And while you're there, we got plenty of other podcasts for you, including Drinks with Dan, Richo's Rant, Richo and Lala, and Spaceball. That is it. That's all I have for you this week. Be well. Stay safe. Talk to y'all again next week.